boy Julian. Welcome to Something Wrong with the Podcast. And before I say anything, call in to this number, 877-557-SWWP, to get in contact with me, your intrusive thought therapist. I would love to hear what problems are going on in your life. Lord knows I have 1,000 going on in my own. But while I'm taking on my own, why not adopt yours as well? Call in with, you know, if you need advice on work, personal, relationship. If you have a healthcare claim that got denied and you want to find out how to get in contact with your CEO, anything you need help with, that's what I'm here for. Now, obviously, guys, it's been a really long break for me. Obviously, we went on a holiday break. I have since remained on break, but I promise you the break has not been breaking. I was broken, but now I'm back together. I have all of this equipment you see over here and beyond behind the camera, and I owe some friends thank yous of my family who's been helping me mentally, my friends who actually helped me supply quite a bit of this equipment. You know who you are. Thank you. I will not name you. I know a lot of people hate you for giving me a microphone right now, but I appreciate all of the help that you've done, and none of this would be possible without any of those people. All right, let's get into some brass tacks here. While I was gone and building what you see in front of you, I also spent a lot of time reading conspiracies about my whereabouts because they were fun and it was just interesting to see what people thought I was up to. The first one I saw, which was gave me a good laugh, was, well, we saw that Conair commercial. He's on the front page of Amazon. He's all over their website. Obviously, he retired off of that money. Thank you. I wish. Not the case. I do have another commercial coming up, though, another body shave products, all that stuff. That seems to be my lane. Second, I saw people say, well, Dreamville announced their lineup. You know Julian is a Dreamvillian and his deep ties with them. Clearly, he left the show to go work on the final festival, the final year, a show they've been doing for years with a staff that has been killing it. Not even just the festival, just in general, their staff is great. You think I left the show to go work a weekend in April? No, unfortunately, that's not the case. Third, the Democratic Party needed me for the next election cycle, which is not wrong. Because while I was home and I'm hanging out with my parents, maybe watching a Knicks game in my basement where I dwell, the door gets kicked in. My mom and dad thrown to the corners, respectively, in the living room. They rush down to the basement, throw a bag over my head, throw me into a white van, and we're flying down I-95. I'm rattling in the back. Someone tickles my feet. I'm kicking. I'm screaming. And the next thing I know, bag gets ripped off. Lights are on. And where I am currently today, sitting before you, I look around. I have no service. But then I see in the corner of the room, mind you, I'm chained to a radiator. I look in the corner of the room, and there's like a pizza pamphlet. And it says Comet Pizza. I'm like, Comet, what do I know that from? Oh my, it's the Comet Pizza, the conspiracy pizza shop. It exists. It is now my home. It is where I currently am. So guys, I'm reporting live from DC. The deep state got me, but I don't have a choice. It's either this or they kill my family. I guess we'll keep them around a little longer. This is my new home. And while I was chained to this radiator, I had a lot of time to reflect. I had a lot of time to think about what happened over this previous break and where I am today and what you see in front of you today. My greatest strength is a writer. As you know, I came in this game a writer. I asked for a pen and a candle, again, while I was chained to this radiator. They begrudgingly supplied it because I wouldn't shut up otherwise. And then I got to writing. I wrote 20 versions of what I'm about to read to you today. I went through all the stages of grief, anger, sad, joy, all the whatever the hell, the seven, wherever, how many there are. And I owe it to everybody listening or watching. And I think I owe it to myself. What's interesting with this, the position that I'm in, when you are in the public eye, people expect things that happen to that public position to be dealt with publicly. So when something randomly happens and it never really gets mentioned, or it's like a footnote at the end of something, that doesn't provide, I'm not saying everyone's owed closure, some things don't, but in this case, for me personally, I feel like people, not closure per se, but at least a perspective, my perspective. And it, and in doing so, I think I wrote a perspective and provided a perspective that many people share, either are currently in, have previously experienced, or will experience if you are entering the workforce. So I wrote this, a letter to you, the listener, the viewer, for you to watch, share. And I really don't think that what I experienced is unique in any sense when it comes to the workforce, especially in this country. I just think I have a responsibility to share that you're not alone in these thoughts and what you're going through. Many people are also experiencing. So without further ado, here's my letter to you. This is a letter to anyone out there that is doing their best to communicate, but your message falls on deaf ears. This is a letter to anyone not being seen. Let me speak directly to all of you. Your career, your goals, your dreams shouldn't tick away like a QB taking a knee to run out the clock. I've lived it. You've lived it. Year after year, pushing back the version of yourself you envisioned as those around you reach higher heights. You've done things that have put money in the pockets of others, hoping that one day that beautiful karma would find its way back to your very own. You've orchestrated in the shadows, making sure the facade doesn't seep through to the public. You work twice as hard to make up for others' lack of work ethic. You placate the middleman for those too divided to speak to each other. You go to work, smile, continue to make up for everyone's shortcomings, abandoning your own along the way. But you must be a team player. But a team implies no individual is greater than the whole. You find solace in some of the supporting cast. One quits. Damn. Then another. There's a pattern here. Now it's just you and one other colleague. You and that colleague have dreams of turning the corner in the new year. But like vinyl on 33, it all happens in a flash. You have to make the change that's long overdue. The bond you developed started in disappointment and grew to be genuine. Like anything in life, guys, the takeaway is where the beauty lies. I was deeply committed to my role, both off camera and in front of the lens. And I had reached a point during this past year where no response was the response. Without getting into the weeds any more than I want to disclose, my next project is what I'm most excited about. I wasn't surprised that my time was coming to a close on the podcast. I was fired. And although I was saddened by this decision, there were signs, subtle and razor sharp, along the way. I am grateful for the 3 years I had producing, creating, performing, you know, writing, acting, both in the studio, at live shows around the country, to our allies in the north and the homies across the pond. I'll be back in South Africa. That has to happen. And I'll just leave you with this, a quote from one of my favorite authors, James Baldwin. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced. Now let's enjoy this community that we're creating together. I spent a long amount of time kind of going through topics that I wanted to talk about, but couldn't talk about until obviously I had everything set here. So I put together a list of my personal ins and outs for 2025. And I'm really curious to know what you guys think about my ins and outs. So let's jump in here. Out. Adjusting your balls. I do it all the time. I'm trying to work on it. In. All three ball brothers. Look, we were hyping up LaMelo certified. Kid's an all-star. He's a beast. I see in the NBA all-star voting, he is always at the top. He's one of the most followed Instagram basketball players on Instagram. He's up there. He's just a good guy. He's funny. He's young. He's rich. He has all these videos of him peeling out of the the Hornets garage, almost like killing a fan that he's jersey he just signed, just fishtailing and bumping into like the fucking Uber drivers that are next to him. I love his energy. Obviously, Lonzo, it's hard to have a career like LaMelo, but Lonzo's in the league and he's playing in the league. He's a good basketball player. I don't think anyone would argue against that. We're looking at the third head of the snake. What's that thing in Harry Potter? Fluffy? We're looking at the third head of Fluffy, or that meme with the dragon where the one is like the tough dragon, like the cool dragon, and like the one that's like a little slow. He's very slow. Jello's been that third dragon. Those days are over. He's back on top. Look, my man Jello signed a great deal, and it's funny. I've been seeing people think that his deal is guaranteed $8 million. Hilarious that people think that that's how record deals work. It's not the NBA. There's no guaranteed money. That's in advance, which basically means he owes them that money back. But I'm not trying to poo-poo his parade. I mean, this is incredible for him. I love what he's done. That song is incredible. The tweaker. So I'm just saying, the kid, he's back. All Ball Brothers are back. I've been critical of LeVar over the years. I still feel like everything I said is right. But look, he's got three. He's 3 for 3. These kids are all successes. I hope Def Jam, that's the only I'd say up to this point, the only mistake he made is going to Def Jam. You have a record like that. I understand the appeal of getting that much money up front, but Jello doesn't seem like he needs that much. Like, he didn't need that money to live. You know what I mean? I think he could have worked, not a better deal financially, maybe not as financially lucrative for him, but better in terms of having a team and just being with a label and a group that's a little more seasoned than what's going on at Def Jam. Def Jam's that's a tough place to sign right now. That's like, I'm trying to think of a sports, that's like signing with the Jets now. Like, the season's over. You're done. Anyway, I don't mean to shit on Def Jam too much. Okay, out. Zionism. Right? That seemed, they had all 2024, they put in work. They did their thing. They're not going to, by no means are they going to stop. This is just, I would like to see it dissipate. In Zion Williamson. Look, guys, the good side of Zion is back. Zion Williamson did one of those like windmill 360 dunks and then sat out like the rest of the year. I'll take one of those dunks from Zion just so the timeline gets flooded again with his Duke highlights, him blowing out his shoe in the tournament, him, honestly, we can keep the Mariah Mills stuff on the shelf. I'm good on all of that. But I will take anytime he does a crazy dunk in the league, which is like once or twice a year now because he only plays about 2 or 3 games, I'll take that any day of the week. Zion is still, I'd say he is the most entertaining player that doesn't play, if that makes sense. Like, put it this way, when Ben Simmons wasn't playing, I mean, even when he's playing, it's not entertaining, but when Ben Simmons wasn't playing, you never heard like the damn, like, it would have been crazy if Ben, because people know what it is. They know the product. They know it's like airballing layups and passing into, you know, in between players. Like, they know the product isn't, it's not quality. Zion is quality. When he's healthy, Zion is one of the most exciting players to watch in the league. He's like a lineman that can put the ball between his legs and rip the rim down. It's like, he defies physics. He's gotten so large, but it hasn't affected his vertical at all. It makes no sense what he does in there. You'd think the way in which people go to Denver, and they play in Denver and the Broncos in particular, and the kickers are hitting bombs, like all the furthest recorded kicks in the NFL are in Denver because of the altitude change. You would think Zion is playing on a different altitude. You would think Zion has flubber in the bottom of his blown out shoes. Shout out Robin Williams. RIP Robin Williams, legend. Pay respects. Put it this way, I'd much rather watch Zion shake the hoop with a tomahawk, then watch a tomahawk missile rip through a daycare center in Gaza. Next. All right. Out. Ozempic. In. Billy Blank's 1998 Tybo VHS collection. Yes. So, and there's a reason for this. Long-term effects of Ozempic. We know it's not going to go well. There's nothing in our healthcare system that goes well. Historically speaking, I mean, like, it's a profit turner. This is like the bad bitch in high school. And then they grow up and they just look warped. And you're like, what? How is this physically possible? That Ozempic is just like the it girl. But there's other things that have longevity plays, like Billy Blank's VHS tapes, proper exercise, dieting, you know, changing your habits, sleeping. Sleep is the biggest thing you could do for your health. That gets overlooked all the time. So, and the VHS thing, I mentioned that in particular because I think 2025 is the year of the VHS. We brought back vinyl records. I have a crate to my right here filled with vinyls. I've done vinyl DJ sets. I love vinyl. Vinyls are outselling. There was the stat that they're outselling CDs. Vinyls are outselling a lot of physical copies of music. It's probably the most bought physical copy of music. I think in an era where we continue to turn back the clock, VHSs are next. I remember when I was a kid, I had the Rugrats movie, and Nickelodeon was so genius for this. Nickelodeon pressed that VHS on a bright orange VHS tape. It was so iconic to this day. I can't get it out of my head. And it's something that I think those will be collectibles, and I think people would want those back at some point in their life. Look at this. I'm going to show you guys on the screen here. I mean, come on. Look at that. They're beautiful. Look at that. I mean, here we go. Doug on VHS. Are you kidding me? Look at Patty Mayonnaise, bad as ever. This meant a lot to me as a kid, and I think that we're heading in this direction where these things will come back and they'll be cool again. And I will do my part to make sure that they are cool again. Okay, let's continue because we have a few more to go through, guys. Out. Terrorism. Give it up. Or just like, don't make it a scene. Like, just like the guy in Vegas. Did you have to do that in the, you know what I mean? I don't, and all, like they said, he shot himself in the head before the car blew up. Just shoot yourself in the head in the peace of your home. Like, have your fucking, the wife, your girl, or you're like your kid walk in and clean up the mess. You got like, you blowing up in front of the Trump. I mean, that photo is hard. Like, it's a crazy photo. I think that symbolizes a lot about this country in the current state of where we're at. But I don't know, like, it just seems so selfish. Just do it at home like a fucking adult. That's where I'm at with terrorism. Yeah, so out terrorism, in the terror squad. I know I just ranted about Ozempic. Fat Joe has been the biggest champion of Ozempic. He's made it like his whole thing. He goes on press runs talking about, he goes on press runs to promote Ozempic. You'd think Big Ozempi is in his like pad in his pockets on this press run that he's at about the product. Maybe we'll get a fire record from Fat Joe because he's feeling himself and he looks good. Maybe. I'd rather have that kind of terror in my life than the other one. Fat Joe skinny, get over it. Out. Driverless Ubers. Or just driverless cars in general. In. Female Uber drivers. Yes. You're probably asking yourself, why would you regress? Why go backwards? I don't want to get in the car and be at the will of Elon and his algorithm. I just don't trust. Elon's fucking lost me. I'm just not a fan of what he's working on, what he's been up to. It's too grifty and right-wingy, and he's just like clearly emotionally just like chipping away at the fabric of a democracy, and in particular the Trump's presidency. And he's just, I don't know, he sucks. I'd rather just have a woman in the car. And I'm not even saying like a woman, maybe we can have sex. No, just like give me someone. I'd rather have the margin of error be at the hands of a woman driving rather than a program where I have no idea what's happening to me. I'd rather have the woman driving, drop her phone, try to get it, and I can see the wheel swerve and veer into oncoming traffic, and I'd be like, eh. Yeah, I see what's about to happen. I'm okay with it. Well, I would suck. I'd hope we'd be pending. We're both fine. At least I would be aware of what's about to happen. I don't want to be in the car. It's like the episode of The Office where Michael and Dwight blindly follow the GPS into the lake, into the pond, because it told them to take a right into the water. These automated cars, I just don't trust them. Things happen on the road. Things arrive. You just can't account, and I just don't want my hands and my life in the hands of a robot. Sorry, call me old-fashioned. Out. Hip-hop lists. We say it every year. I really mean it. It'll be hard-pressed to hear me talk about any lists, especially hip-hop, on this show. But you know what I will talk about? You know what's in this year? Schindler's List. The 1994 Oscar winner for Best Picture. It won 11 Oscars, guys. It won the whole... everyone else should have stayed home. It cleaned up. It's not even close. It's the Taylor Swift of movies. I mean, I think it's been long enough. A lot of these kids were born years after Schindler's List. I was a baby when it came out. I was late to the game. But a lot of these kids need to be educated and just watch good cinema. It's a Spielberg. It's a classic. Check it out. Schindler's List. That's just a good recommendation. Out. Holding Space. Shut up. I don't want to, just that whole thing is, it's corny. We're over it. It's trending. It's like the corporations are tweeting it now. It's over. In. Holding Your Breath. Well, holding your breath until you pass out. And then you wake up covered in matcha powder somewhere in a field. And then you have a signed copy of Stevie Wonder driving a Zamboni. Just sounds more interesting to me. Let's talk about Drake. Now, a while ago, I tweeted this. Drake naming his poem after Bron is kind of cute. They really care about each other. And I know what you're thinking. That sounds like it's hate or shade. But I do mean this genuinely. The photo with LeBron and Drake, that's just my favorite photo of them together. It's very funny. But I tweeted this because this was off the heels of Drake putting out his Irish freestyle, which was obviously speaking directly to LeBron. And there's a lot of pain in what he's saying. He's clearly hurt. And I don't even want to bring up the Kendrick, the Not Like Us, the current update with all the lawsuits and all that. I really only want to focus on Drake and his friends and what's really happening behind the scenes with the people that he once loved and trusted, but has now since felt have abandoned him. It's a story that a lot of people can resonate with. So Drake, I heard that song and it hurts. Like there's a lot of pain. And with pain, you know, especially with a person like LeBron, where you've always looked out for him. You had Bronny walk out with you to your LA show after his scare. He was the person that walked you out, joined you. You've taken Bron in on so many occasions, spoke of him highly in your music. I'm sure the stuff that we don't even aware of off camera and beyond, you've done probably more for him in business opportunities as well and vice versa. That bond probably felt extremely authentic. Problem is now we look at Drake and I'm not saying this song is a cry for help, but you, let's just break this down. You're covered in Nocta, which is great Nike tech gear, but underneath that Nocta, your skin is covered. Your dermis is covered with tattoos of LeBron, Steph Curry, all these people that are your peers, your equals, but also your idols, people you respect. And in your blood, in those veins, it's coursing with whatever spritz concoction in that balloon wine glass you always are seen carrying around. And that alcohol is just numbing the pain. But that, you know, you can't, unless you get the tattoos removed, that ink is there. It's permanent. And you thought those friendships at that time would be permanent. So it's tough when you're in this public space and you have to live out these fallouts publicly. LeBron tries to post a sneaker, the Drake Air Force One with the infinity sign, as a peace offering, and Drake obviously is like, I don't, fuck that. We're long past that. You've had your chance at redemption. But every time I look up, you're rapping, singing, dancing, two-stepping to Kendrick on the court and even on the Olympic team. Like, he's over it. And Drake has clearly moved on past LeBron. But what's interesting with the LeBron relationship in particular, LeBron's not the one that probably pushed it over the edge. I know his public antics with the dancing and being a Kendrick show don't look good. Savannah, in my mind, is most likely the person that pushed LeBron to jumping ship. Now, let me explain. If everything, pending everything, is true, and I mean, let's be honest, it's LeBron is LeBron James. He's one of one. Drake and LeBron are in a category of their own. When I speak on them, I'm not even speaking in terms of common social expectations in the realities that we all function in. They're so far out of the realm of reality that what I'm about to say is not excusing the behavior, but I'm saying it in a tone of understanding that their arrangements are very different than the average couple. Or the average just living man, woman, anybody. I think when LeBron moved to Cleveland for the first time when he was drafted, and it was obviously an instant success, him and Savannah at that time most likely had a discussion about their relationship and what the terms of their relationship are. Do they owe us an explanation? No. But this is LeBron James. He's shattered nearly every record in the NBA ever. You think he's only having sex with one woman? That's not happening. With understanding that, Savannah and him probably have an arrangement, most likely saying, look, keep shit under wraps, don't embarrass me, and don't let this ever blow up in our faces. So now you're seeing Drake send DMs, kind of dry snitching on LeBron, which again, it shouldn't surprise anybody. You think the guy that breaking all of Michael Jordan's records he scored over 30,000 points, you think he's had sex with one girl? That math adds up. There's no ounce of reality in your mind if you think that these men are faithful. And that's faithful is not the right word because they are faithful. It's faithful to the arrangement that him and his wife have created. So obviously LeBron moves to South Beach, has the decision moment. He's all over Miami doing his thing. And I'm not saying LeBron's out there dogging women. I think he's doing it respectfully with respect to his kids, his wife, is obviously his daughter. He's going about it in the way in which someone of his caliber would. You send someone in after the courtside, you corral courtside. And this is, I'm just going off of stuff that I've heard, not, you know, exclusive to LeBron, just the nature of the game. There's a scout that goes courtside, you know, gives the woman a phone number at the end of the game. The woman calls or texts the number. And it's not LeBron or in this story, it's not LeBron that they're texting. They're texting someone else, his handler, let's say. We have a real game in New York City. We'll be at Little Sister. So-and-so, LeBron, would like to meet you in the lobby. Here's a text. Not even LeBron. His name never gets brought up. A Laker player would like to see you at the club. We have a table. Please bring a friend. We're trying to make you, you'll have a great night. Okay, sure. The girl obliges, brings her friend. Cute friend, obviously. They get the deal. No one's here by surprise. Walk into the section. Obviously, it's that back corner section to the left, the carved out table with the insert where you step up. It's like your own little area. It's a little private. And then, you know, seated on the table there, LeBron or whoever. But in this story, it's LeBron. Those women walk up. The handler, basically, it's like a handoff, brings her to LeBron, says, hey, here's what you were looking at earlier during the game, courtside against the Knicks. And that's how these things play out. And then more often than not, it's, you know, hey, I have a hotel room upstairs here, or we can have the car bring us to wherever. I have a property here. These are arrangements that that should be happening. I'm not saying put an end to these arrangements. They're going to happen. But I do think that they're happening with the permission of the spouse, the woman that these men are married to. So Drake comes in, and Drake's like the friend that's always single, publicly known to be a partier, obviously has enough money to do whatever he wants, the amenities, supplies to do whatever he wants with anybody he wants. And Savannah sees someone like Drake as a threat. Understanding that her and LeBron have already had an arrangement, she's not naive to what's going on. But it still doesn't mean you don't have disdain for someone like Drake muddling your agreed-upon operation, but making it a little more messy. Like, you know, she knows, put it this way, she knows when Bron's on the road, there's a chance he could be doing what they've agreed to. But if Bron's on the road in Toronto, and then the plan is after the game to go out with Drake and the OVO crew, then it's not, I'd wonder what he's doing. It's, I know what he's doing, and I know the crowd that comes with these guys. And that, over time, harbors resentment. And I'm sure there's more to it. But it's like, if I'm hitting up this dude, if I'm in a relationship and I call this one friend and my girl knows, she's like, I don't like that friend for A, B, and C, fill in whatever reason. When you're with him, you get too drunk. When you're with him, you always get in a fight. It's one of those guys. So when you're with Drake, there's always these women, and it's always mess, and things always just go a little too far for what we agreed upon, for what I'm comfortable with. I know we agreed upon this, but it doesn't mean it brings me joy or happiness, right? So that's how I think it is. I think the key to this relationship with LeBron and the seams ripping here is really Savannah's relationship with Drake. And we've seen that it's, you know, a word, a photo can only, you know, communicate so much. It's just a fraction of time. But there's that iconic photo of them sitting next to each other. It's Drake, LeBron, and Savannah, which you can see here on the screen. And Savannah's looking at LeBron, at Drake, like, It's like, you know, it's just that face. And I know that photo shouldn't surmise their whole relationship, but to the alleged situation that I'm creating, it does. So I'm going to roll with it. You know, that stuff, it hurts people. It chips away at people time and time again. So when there's an opportunity, especially in this case, when you're being smeared as a pedophile, you like young women, you're trafficking people, like that's Savannah can be like, hey, look, I told you so. You can continue going about what I'm okay with, but he can't be a part of it anymore. And that's what I think is going on with this situation. All right, let's switch gears, but not too far. Let's stay within the realm of infidelity, but not arranged. Well, I guess supposedly this is arranged as well, but not publicly accepted. I have up here the Joy Taylor FS1 web, where basically, if you're not up to speed, she was using her sexuality to get advanced as a personality on the show, the FS1 show, with Skip and Shannon Sharp at the time, and now with Emmanuel Acho and a executive, Mr. Dixon, at FS1. In approximately February 2020, this is from the lawsuit, which I'm reading, Ms. Taylor asked Ms. Faraji, and Ms. Faraji is the hairstylist that befriended Joy Taylor, who's working closely with her and confided in her. So Joy Taylor, obviously being comfortable with her, was like, hey, look, girl, like, we can go up the chain of command together. Let me put you on game. So let's continue. She asked Ms. Faraji to meet her for lunch in Beverly Hills. When Ms. Faraji arrived, she found Ms. Taylor with a man, Emmanuel Acho, one of the personalities on the show. Ms. Faraji did not know Mr. Acho, but could tell that the two were romantically involved. We're adults. We know the signs. A few months after meeting Mr. Acho for lunch, Ms. Faraji noticed him in the hallway while at work. She later asked Ms. Taylor if Mr. Acho also worked at Fox News. Ms. Taylor confirmed and explained that she wanted Mr. Acho to eventually recommend her on the show for Speak for Yourself, the show which she's currently on. Ms. Faraji, all alarmed and warned Ms. Taylor that she should probably not sleep with Mr. Dixon, Mr. Dixon being the executive at Fox and Mr. Acho at the same time. Pretty good advice, right? Let's continue. Mr. Dixon's a very powerful man, and obviously if he's angry, no bueno. Ms. Taylor told her, don't worry about me. She's basically like, I got enough pussy for everybody. Relax. Everybody's getting what they want. Eventually, it got out. She followed through with her plan, told the company, told herself she would not allow herself to be forced out by Ms. Dixon like other talented women. And to no surprise, all of this blows up. And now we're here. The Band-Aids have been ripped off. The lies are being exposed. The relationships are being exposed. Old posts are getting deleted. One being, this is one of my favorite posts from Emmanuel Acho. I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. I think it's pronounced Acho. I'm assuming it's Nacho without the N. So let's watch this. In a now deleted video, he was saying this about Joy Taylor's work ethic.
A woman, a black woman, Daily Show, sports. Do you all realize how hard it is to get into the position that she is in?
Which position are you referring to, Emmanuel? Are you referring to the seat in which she sits between you on the set, or the position where her knees are slamming against your earlobes? Let's continue.
So often there's misogyny and sexism running rampant in sports, and we...
Not misogyny and sexism. Ugh, shame.
I don't even care what women have to say in sports. But Joy is not only in the position on television as a woman, as a black woman, but as an opinionist. So not just asking men what they think, but providing her own unique and distinct insight. It's hard to do, and Joy, you have done it. So congratulations. Looking forward to working with you, and hope y'all tune in. 4:30 to 6 Eastern.
Well, looks like those nights of being barefoot in Joy's crib with your feet on her couch, and the nights with Mr. Dixon, and the attempts by Skip Bayless, Mr. Bayless, which we'll get to in a second, have really paid off for Joy. And I know the easy, easy angle here is, oh, Julian, classic misogynist, here to shit on Joy Taylor. I'm not. I think Joy is doing what a lot of women would do. I think she's a career woman. She saw Lane, this opportunity to be the attractive female on a show with all men that are, it's all testosterone build, a lot of sports yelling, blah, blah. And she's the cute, pretty face that cuts through the tension and can placate both sides, maybe sprinkle in an opinion or two. It can, you know, either be valued or invalidated. No one cares so much as to what she's saying necessarily, but her value, her added value, does a lot to the show. But it seems like her added value was most being used off the show by the very people who she was colleagues with, by the very people she was working for. So Joy, I don't have too much. I'm not trying to pile on to you. It seems like you have plenty of people piling into you. I only want to say you're a career woman. I hope this doesn't ruin, it's going to hurt your reputation. I don't think that's a surprise. But I hope this doesn't ruin your career by any means. I also think this is another case of one of those, like, no shit, this is happening. We're talking, it's Fox Sports that she was working with. Fox, the media conglomerate that pushes insane propaganda and falsities, and is the, if you were to, the poster child for misogyny of a news network. Fox News is the beacon of what you'd expect, a network you would expect. And I'm saying this is not exclusive to Fox. Obviously, we saw it happen with Matt Lauer. There's monsters everywhere. The network's reputation doesn't span to the people or the personalities that they hire. So obviously, Fox is going to hire a hot woman. And obviously, the men in power are going to try to fuck that hot woman. There's always a power dynamic. And, you know, I'm sure it didn't immediately start with, hey, if you want this job, you got to blow the team. I think these things kind of take time, and as they kind of maybe goes from like a nice hug, hugs get a little longer, hands start to lower down the, you know, the small of one's back, and then you get to the current situation where Joy was willingly having sex with these men, understanding what would come with that for her career, the advancement of her career. So it's interesting to see how these things play out. The sad news, at least for me and other viewers, is they have her wearing sweaters now. They put the silencer on her. She's got she can't show the puppies anymore, which is tough, her heavies. But, you know, it's funny because yes, she's in this position. And did she deserve it when she started? Probably not. But she's obviously shown her worth now. So now we're in that bind of, well, she's here and she's doing fine. And even with all the stuff that's come out since, she's still doing the job and doing it at a high level. So it seems like the restructuring has to be done from within. And I do think there needs to be more of a priority to put women in these positions of personalities, forming opinions and sharing, not forming opinions. Everyone forms an opinion, but having the platform to share their opinion and not just be looked at as or not just be used as like a concubine for a network, just have more value as a personality and respected as a person, rather than saying, okay, yes, there is a job, there is a career, but with that comes your availability in the bedroom and my wants and needs as a man. So just some thoughts on that. Let's shift gears to Skip Bayless, the nasty white man involved with this case. So we can see here Faraji, that hairstylist, alleges that she started experiencing harassment from Bayless while working as a full-time hairstylist on Undisputed beginning in 2017. Faraji says Bayless would give her, quote, lingering hugs and, quote, kisses on the cheek before becoming more aggressive and direct with his advances, which she consistently declined. So now we skip ahead 4 years later in 2021. She told Skip Bayless about a cancer scare involving her left ovary, hoping that he would back off. In response, she says he offered her $1.5 million to have sex with him. Let me repeat that. I have cancer, maybe. I'm terrified. Can you please leave me alone at work? How about $1.5 million and I fuck you instead? Skip Bayless is just cut from a seasoned cloth that I don't think is made anymore. Those people are thankfully aging out. Skip Bayless, first of all, I'm not someone that pays for women. I've never bought women. I never understood that. But I now fear for those that do. Skip Bayless may have inflated the entire market. He created a value rate, a rate of his own that no one would play ball for. I mean, if he's paying $1.5 million to have sex with a coworker, with a colleague, what is he pay? What's his going rate for a hand job? $250,000? What's the 0.54? $1 million is a pretty round number. A lot of things would get done for just $1 million flat. A lot of people would take $1 million to do. Would you bet $1 million? There's the classic idiom. What would you do for $1 million? Would you do this for $1 million? There's a reason why people say that. Adding an additional $500,000, what do you want to cuddle after? What do you expect to get with that extra $0.5 million? Unless you're like taking care of her cancer treatments, which I don't think you were implying by saying, can I have sex with you after she told you that news? Skip, I mean, it's so on brand, but it's so odd. And the one person I would have loved to have hear his reaction to if they were still on the show at the time is our good friend Shannon Sharp. If this became a Club Shay Shay moment, that'd be great. Skip needs to do Club Shay Shay after this. I could see Skip sitting across from Shannon on Club Shay Shay and Shannon just looking at him like, Skip, 1.5. Skip, you gave her what? Skip. It would be 3 hours of him repeating Skip's name, letting us know that he's very much talking to Skip. It's not like when Skip left the show and he kept calling his new co-host Skip. It would be a masterclass of comedy. It would pick up where Cat Williams left off. I would love to see Shannon Sharp in awe recounting that moment where Skip is obviously regretting everything that he did up to this point now that it's public. But let's see how that plays out. Hopefully there is an appearance on Club Shay Shay coming soon. Hey everyone, we're going to take a quick detour before we get into voicemails and I give you my intrusive thoughts. I have to give a special shout out to today's sponsor, Tequila 512. And I know what you're thinking, Julian, you only have one episode. How does this even make sense? You barely have a YouTube channel. None of this is real yet. Well, Tequila 512 believes in my vision and believes in the creator. And they are supporting me today on my journey. Guys, look at these beautiful bottles. I have a Blanco over here, a Reposado over here. All my friends know I'm a Blanco guy, but I love to host. Got to keep a bottle of Repo at the crib. Guys, this tequila is triple distilled and made with volcanic spring water. I've never said that before in my life. I have no idea what it is, but it's delicious. Volcanic spring water sounds like what Oprah bought up when Hawaii mysteriously had those fires and she grabbed 2,000 acres. It seems like she was in it for the volcanic spring water. Guys, this tequila comes to us by way of Austin, Texas, but it originates in Mexico. If this is the product crossing our borders, I'm all for it. Open the borders. Bring in more of the delicious agave and volcanic spring water. I'm all for it. Give it to me. Guys, it's called Tequila 512. I'm not a mathematician, but 5 plus 1 plus 2 equals 8. So you know they ate with this recipe. And not only did they eat with the product that they're cooking, they're also letting me give away 2 products. What are they giving away, Julian? They're giving away 2 paddle boards. And not just 2 paddle boards. They're giving away paddle boards with a backpack, a paddle, and a paddle pump. Guys, this is a kit, your summer starter kit. When it's the summer, I'm out on the water. I'm salt life. I go out east in New York. I go into the bodies of water. I try to surf. I fail. I body surf a little better than that. This summer, I'm paddle boarding. If I go down to visit the good people at Tequila 512 in Austin, Texas way, I'm on the lake in Austin, Texas, paddling. If I go to my second home in Chicago, Lake Michigan, I'm on the water, paddling. And nothing would make me happier than to have you paddle alongside me, or you take someone special to go paddle along with you. What's cooler than being on the open water in the summer? Guys, look at these paddleboards. I mean, they're beautiful. They're huge. They're yellow. You stand out. Who doesn't want to stand out in the summer? Everybody wants to look cool, especially in the summertime, especially when you're on the water. Guys, I'm so excited to give you the opportunity to win these boards. Again, you'll win a board, a backpack, a paddle pump, and the paddle. All you have to do is comment on this video, on my Instagram, any of my socials, and I will choose the winner here on an episode coming shortly. Thank you so much, Tequila 512. Let's get back to the episode. All right, everybody, we're back. It's time for voicemails. You know how this goes. I'm your intrusive thought therapist. If you do have any problems with work, career, personal, anything that's been on your mind or pressing, and you're too afraid to talk to family, friends, or even if you've been talking to them and need more advice, call me. 877-557-SWWP. Let's get to the first call ever on Something Wrong with the Podcast. Let's hear it. Here we go.
Julian, this is not what it was supposed to be. You're supposed to tell people what was happening. I don't have many issues other than the fact that I just turned 30. Actually, I turned 30 a year ago, and I'm about to be 31. Okay. And I'm trying to figure out my life. I've had the same job for 10 years now and make a lot of money. I feel like there should be a pivot in my life at some point, and I'm trying to figure that out. But I have a great life because I have a great husband and a great, friend, family circle. But I still feel like at some point, something's got to give. I'm about to jump out the window and become a rock star or something. Something needs to happen. I don't really know where I'm going with this. I just started talking. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out what this means, and I don't know. But I just wanted to call to see what happened. Okay, bye.
Well, thank you so much for calling. And shoot, congratulations on being the first call I've ever taken on this show. I think you're in a really unique situation. Look, you said you have, and I have a transcription here, that's why I'm going to keep looking at my computer. You turned 30, you're turning 31 soon. You have a great job, 10 years at a job. I mean, that alone is nothing to scoff at. I mean, that shows that you're good at what you do. You're obviously a career woman, and you're succeeding in the field in which you know your profession is. I think more often than not, I think when the older generation, like the boomers, like our parents, when they found that job, and like, I mean, I can speak directly, like my parents or people that I know that are older, they got that job, they rode that corporate ladder until the highest they could climb, and that was it. You lock in, you make that career your life, that company your life, not just the career, and you take that as far as you can go. I think we are, our generation, we're about the same age. I get bored, and when I'm stagnant, I want a new challenge. And I don't think there's anything wrong with, clearly you could take, I think, your career and go anywhere in a field. If you want to do a lateral move in terms of just being at a different company, getting a fresh perspective, meeting new people, maybe, you know, doing something at a larger company. I don't know what you do for work, then maybe that's the fix. But you did say you have a support system. You have a husband. You have great family, great friends, like great people to lean on, and they give you good advice. I think as you're going through whatever this is, and what you're going through is very common. I mean, I'm living it right now as well. You also said in here, I don't really know where I'm going with this. I just started talking. I think starting talking is the first step into figuring out exactly what you want to do. Not like with the rest of your life, so to speak, but just in terms of what's going to break the mold from the monotony of what you don't like about the current situation. And I think you, with a supportive system, with a husband, with family, with friends, be open with them, talk to them. And you talking to them isn't like a matter of, I don't think anyone could misconstrue this. Like, when I hear this, I don't hear it as depression. I hear it as, okay, I'm sure everything you have right now at one point was a goal and something you sought out in your life. I try to think 10 years back when you got this job offer, and then try to think over your 10 years, every time you get a promotion, how excited you've come. Like, you've done all the things that you've wanted to accomplish in this version of yourself. And I think the beautiful thing is you're now at the point where while the ceiling was here at one point, 10 years later, now it's here. And you're realizing I can go higher. I expect more from myself. And what's beautiful about your journey is while you expect more for yourself, I'm sure everybody that's loves you in your life will support you on whatever you want to do next. My advice with this is don't make any rash decisions. I think the fulfillment here would come from maybe finding a new, you said I'll play the guitar, do something. If it's not finding a new job, which it doesn't have to be. I'm not even trying to dump on your job. Pick up a new hobby. Let's lean into a creative outlet. You jokingly said, you know, play the guitar, see what happens. Maybe pick up a guitar. Maybe there's a TikTok you have in a saved draft or a reel that you have that piqued your interest of, I've always wanted to try that. Something as small as an activity as knitting or whatever. It sounds, you know what I mean? It sounds a little like, what? It sounds not exciting, but I think creating and doing something different and challenging yourself, using your brain in another way than you're already doing it, is the exciting part. Over 10 years, and it seems like so much of your life is cocooned in like crystallized, it's formed into what you've made it. It's so comfortable that why not try something that brings some discomfort into your life? I think that's what I would go. Try something creative that brings discomfort. You have a husband, make him do some wacky shit with you. If it's as simple as take a pottery class, or something as like crazy as let's go skydiving together. Just get jolt your system and then see what comes with it. I think this could also be a time not to push drugs on people, but this isn't a bad time to maybe expand your mind. I don't know if you smoke or if you are open to trying shrooms, but sometimes, like, I'm not saying full send it, go down a psychedelic trip where it just alters your chemistry forever, but maybe just like, you know, a baseline cap or two of mushrooms could expand your mind and just change your perspective on everything. And when I've done shrooms in the past, I think it hasn't necessarily changed. It changes my perspective on the world, but in terms of the perspective it does to me in my personal life, I think it helps me see how much the community and the people around me help me, give me the strength and the confidence to create and do, if that makes sense. I think the reason why I'm doing this right now is because of those people, like you said, your husband, your supportive system, your friends. To me, that's my friends, my brothers, my parents. Those are the people in my life that when I am at that level of discomfort and I think I've plateaued in a career or at a juncture in my life, I'll bring that idea to them. And they always say the same thing, like, look, we believe in anything you want to do. We know you're capable of doing anything you want to do, and we'll, however we can, we'll support you. And usually that support just comes from, if I'm calling, hey, I have an idea, I want to run this by you. And it just, talking is so important into creating the version of yourself that you want to become and the next version of yourself. There's nothing wrong with who you currently are. You sound like you're making amazing money. You have a successful career. A lot of people would kill for a job right now. Shit, I'm unemployed. So like you're hitting all the peaks of life already. So with such a strong foundation, I think a jolt to your system would be fun. So yeah, I don't know where you live. If you live near a beach, do like one of those polar plunges. Just do something to shake it up, break your routine, and go from there. But good luck. Thank you for calling. I would love to hear, after you try something out of your comfort zone, call back. And yeah, I would love to get an update. But good for you. I mean, that's amazing. Let's shake it up here. Let's get into something a little wacky. I had this call from Australia that I'd love to play out here. Let's see how this goes.
Okay. Weird voicemail. What up, Junior, man? I am all the way based out in Australia. I just want to know if I should tell my girl. I got a case, man. I got a new girl. She's perfect. She's beautiful. She's white. And she don't know shit about nigga shit. And my ex-girl is taking me to court right now, son. And she's taking me to court right now, babe, because I sent her and her brother some nudes of her sucking another dick. That's not...
Whoa. How did you get these photos? Wait, hold on. Let's just continue. All right.
Mine. Because she sent me. Because I was mad. So... I ain't even supposed to be talking about this because my lawyer is still working on it, but let me know, man. Am I going to beat this case or what, man? Because, it's in court. I don't know, dog. But, yeah, let me know what you think, man. Holla.
All right, well, I would have, well, for starters, take your lawyer's advice and probably don't call about an ongoing case, especially when it sounds like you're the person that messed up here. I have so many questions. How did you get the photos? What were you trying to gain by sending her photos of giving head to another guy? Is this supposed to be a ooh, gotcha moment? Is this one of the cases where it's you hurt me, now I'm gonna hurt you, or I'm gonna expose you? You said, okay, let's see here. Let me read over this. You have currently a white girl. You said she's perfect, but she's very unaware of your current case. As perfect as your current situation is, this isn't one of the cases where it's like, well, my past was my past, my ex was my ex, and I can move on, and now I'm a better version of myself. I'm looking forward to this current relationship that I'm in. You're in the middle of a case. You have a lawyer telling you literally not to speak about it. So your first thing that you do is grab the phone of a number that I bought like last week and call me about it. I mean, starter, dude, listen to your lawyer. Don't and never try to blackmail somebody. I don't even, like, what is, that's an awful idea out off rip under any circumstances, blackmailing. I didn't know you guys got down like that in Australia. You couldn't just like find a python or like a giant spider and put it in her bedroom, or, you know, have a python eat her little mini shih tzu dog or something like that. You had to go the extremes of of this. I mean, you're in Australia. Like, let a kangaroo loose in her new man's crib or something like that. He'll knock him out. I mean, this seems so unreasonable. I mean, I don't know what she did to you to hurt you. I really hope, however this case goes, and I don't know the laws in Australia. Why would I? I mean, it could be, what if it's like those prisons in like Norway where basically you get a Roku TV and it's like a 5-star spa experience. It's like going on a vacation. Who knows? I don't know if you do time for stuff like this. What does that even look like? What's community service in Australia? You hold baby koalas and feed them while they sleep in your arms. I don't know what a penalty in Australia is. You can't eat the blooming onion when you go to Applebee's. I don't know what that looks like. No matter how this goes, and it sounds like you made it very clear that you're in the wrong. I don't know how this can shake out, but say it goes bad. And I don't know. This doesn't seem like it's a jailable offense, but at the very least, let's say community service or house arrest doesn't even make sense in this case. Say it's community service. I'm convincing myself that's what you'll have to do here. And you have a parole officer. I don't fucking know. I don't know. I wouldn't hide this from my new girlfriend. You said she doesn't know my past or any of the activity that I've been on. Towing the line between like creating a new version of yourself and hiding the things that you don't like about yourself from your current partner is a very slippery slope, especially in this case. And it usually comes back to bite you in the ass. I mean, from experience, I feel like when I was younger and I was hiding, I feel like I always dated mostly girls that I was attracted to were more like straight edge in terms of they drink a little bit, but they weren't really into the drugs. And when I was like in my big drug thing, when I was doing all my, you know, coke, I would not communicate to them. What I was, I just randomly come home or like bust in at like 4 a.m. with my heart like fluttering, and then I'd get in bed and be like, it's like, did you run here? And I'm like, yeah, of course. I sprint everywhere I go. So even though that's not as extreme as this, you're still not being yourself and you're hiding the truth of the reality of who you are. I would just advise against that at all costs. I don't think this is going to go well for you. I do think you're going to have to tell your girl. I don't think you have to tell her, hey, I sent my ex a photo of her sucking another guy's dick. I don't think you need to say what you did. But I think she should be aware that my ex and I, something happened between us and it's currently being handled by my lawyer. And hopefully that should be enough information. I don't know. She sounds, this girl, the way you've painted her, she sounds naive. It doesn't sound like she'd be the one to pry, but I don't know. I just don't want her to, you know, say you're chilling at your crib one day and there's a bang on the door, and then all of a sudden, you know, Australian's finest agents and crocodile hunters are at your crib like, yo, we're taking you to New Zealand. I don't even know, where do you go? Because Australia was a prison, so technically you'd be going to prison on a prison. So, I don't know, man. Good luck, dude. I would love an update if they give you a phone wherever you get sent. Kudos to you, man. Next time I bust down a blooming onion, I'll keep you in mind, bro. I'm really rooting for you. And for the first caller, I mean, look, it could be worse. Could be in this guy's situation halfway across the world. All right, let's take another.
What's up, Julian? This is Jalen. I am 27, living in SoCal. Just dealing with a little relationship bump. Met this girl through a mutual friend's party. Connected pretty close that day. Spent the last 6 months just getting closer and closer. She told me she loves me. I reciprocated that feeling back. It feels right. It feels everything. But within about that month of talking, getting to know each other, she did lose her oldest brother, through suicide. trigger warning. Unfortunately, I know it's been taking a toll on her throughout. She's also one of the providers for her family. So I could just see that there's constant fight with her, and everything's felt completely fine up until about New Year. She said it's something just slapped her in the face. And she says she just needs to properly grieve and need space. We ended kind of on a good note. She expressed some concerns just about the relationship and why we wouldn't, why she wants to step back, as well as just focus on grieving.
Yeah.
I just not sure. I've had it in the past where these things just kind of disappear after the fact, but I really do believe this girl is the one. And unsure, do I fight it out? It's been about 2 weeks since I last, 3 weeks since I last talked to her.
Okay.
Yeah, just real interested. I'm not sure where to go from here. Do I have faith? Do I hold up? And yeah, just curious. But also hope you're doing well, Julian. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jalen. First, let's condolences to your girlfriend, or we'll figure out how to define it. But her brother, that's awful. It's one of those. There's never a good time to lose anybody, certainly a sibling in that way. But especially when you said it all came to a head around New Year's, which to me makes perfect sense. Holiday time is always the most difficult with losing a loved one, and it's tough, like bringing in a new year, knowing your brother. This will be you have like those things that go. This is the first official year that he won't, you know, we won't be together. But in your case, you said you're looking at a 6 month fling. You met her at a party. It happened fast. She led. I think that's a key detail. You said she said to you first, "I love you," and you reciprocated, which is beautiful. That's all amazing. And then everything obviously subsequently happened, unfortunately. You said you're looking at 2 or 3 weeks since you last talked to each other, and she needed space and time. I'm curious, in this 2-3 week span, have you been reaching out? Have you been texting? My advice to that would be don't. I would respect the space that she asked for. I'm very curious to know how that last conversation went before she said she needed space. Death is always one of those things where people always want to... There's never a good thing to say, and there's obviously the problem. There's no solution to what happened. You can never be like, there's no, "Oh, well, thank you. Now I'm good." That's a lifelong thing. I think all you can do is, when she said, "I need space," that final conversation, I hope that it went for you. You were expressing how, you know, you'd always be there. You do love her, and you mean it. And what love is being there for someone. One of the many things love is being there for someone throughout any phase of what they're going through. So much of the young love is the highs, and it just keeps, everything feels like such like a euphoric high. But then when a moment like this happens, there's still love to be had, arguably more love to be needed in those situations. And this isn't a case where it's like love bomb, where you're checking in like, "Hey, let me send you this. I'm going to send you a dinner tonight." Or, "Hey, I just had a dream about you. I'm thinking about you." None of that stuff. That's overkill. And that could change someone's perception of you and clutter their mind and kind of, so to speak, give them the ick. But the mature thing to do, I think love doesn't go away. I think love grows. I think she's suffering from losing a loved one that she, you know, you guys were loving romantically, but she's, you know, had lost a love of a sibling. And obviously that takes priority to, I think, any other form of love in her life. And I don't blame her. I would as well lean into my family, because you also have to think about this. If she does open up to you and confide in you, then she's also letting you in on a deeper level of love. You know what I mean? So say she keeps that separate. Say she doesn't feel, express her pain and how much her brother's loss really hurts her. In a sense, she's kind of, she's protecting herself, but she doesn't want to let you in for the sake of potentially being hurt again in a different kind of love. So I guess like what I'm saying is, say she lets you into this level of pain and hurt, expresses how she feels, is very open, which I'm sure you'd love, and I'm sure you'd be there for her. I'm not saying this is a hypothetical, but then, you know, you two break up, or God forbid something happens to you, I guess in this case for her, then she'd have to go through that again. Like, I gave myself to this person in my darkest moment. I lost my brother. And so later down the road, he dumped me. And now I'm stuck again with another loss of love. This is like her first, not a test, but it's a real look at how much of Jalen do I want into my personal. Because you can love someone, but young love, we still protect our core. My parents, my brothers, I still keep them at a distance if I'm in a relationship with someone to a certain extent. So I think she's probably going through that. I think you're right to give her the space. I don't think you should apply pressure. Do you have friends of hers? Do you know her friends? You just had to be together for 6 months. You met at a party. Maybe tap the ear of one of her friends. Hey, how's she doing? Hey, has she, you know, I'm curious to just get an update on her. Don't go in there and be like, has she spoken about me? Just genuinely, because you sound like you care about her and you love her. Well, you do. Ask them how she's doing. And then from there, make an informed decision on if you feel comfortable enough or not. I don't think it's fair to create a timeline like, hey, it's been 3 weeks. Hey, it's been 4 weeks. I'm giving her till week 5 before I, you know, knock on her door. But I don't think you should lose faith. You said you love her, man. That's a beautiful thing. And to be that vulnerable with someone is a beautiful thing. And I don't discourage you to throw it all away because she's going through probably the most difficult time in her life. I don't think that's what love is to throw your arms up when someone's going through the most difficult time in their life. I think that's when you think about them the most. That's when you want to help them the most. And I'm certain that you do. But right now, she's just not ready for that. But you have to understand that that's okay. And that sometimes love needs to operate at a distance. But it's still there. And although you may not be talking, I'm sure she's thinking about you. And I'm sure she cares deeply about you. You could do like the social media approach, you know, post a story, see if she's looking. Like, you know, all the little tricks and tips that we know as the social media age kids. I really wish I had a better fix here, man. I've lost friends, close friends of mine have lost siblings to unaliving, as they say now. And my approach is pretty simple. It's always been this is a friend, not romantic relationship, but I love you and I'm here for you in whatever capacity that may be. And I know for me, most of the time for my friends, I'm like the comedic relief. So it'd be weird of me to be the serious guy. So I know they lean on me for the escape factor, to laugh, to go do an activity or something, to go out, get a drink. You did say the conversation ended on a good note. So I would keep that faith, keep that in mind. And I guess my advice would be, if you have mutual friends, talk to them. I'm sure one of them has been talking to her and can probably give you a clear answer of where she's at mentally. talk to your friends and your family and let them know. I'm sure you've spoken to, you know, if you, your parents or whoever about this girl in your life. And there's someone in your life that's married or been in a relationship that can relate, that could also be there for you. And, you know, give you more advice in SoCal. You said you're in Southern California. I didn't speak about it earlier in the episodes, but my thoughts and prayers are with everybody that was affected by the fires in Southern California. That is, I hate how politicized everything's become and how we're in this era of, ooh, yeah, like the rich people in the Palisades, they deserve it. No one deserves to have their homes and their belongings and their memories ripped from underneath them. I don't care how well off or wealthy you are. It's a tragedy. I hate that Elon and his right wing puppets are pushing the narrative that it's illegal immigrants and homeless people that are just lighting fires across the city and leveling neighborhoods to loot. Why would you? You're not going to loot anything that you charred to a crisp. That's not how that works. And then there's also the looting narrative, I would assume, is also being pushed by insurance companies because, well, arson isn't covered in insurance. You want to talk about why do people hate the CEOs of insurance companies? Because you know that they are quietly sitting in their mansions that were untouched, discussing how do we not owe anybody money on this tragedy that just took place, a natural tragedy that just took place. How can we make sure we do not pay a dime to anybody that lost their property? It was arson. They did it. They burned it up. They lit it up. So that's our out. We don't owe anybody a dime. It's awful. No one deserves this. Even if you are wealthy, a lot of people, I mean, most people live within the means that they make. So what I mean by that is even if you are, you know, even if you make $300,000, $500,000 a year, you still meet at those means, which means you're most likely, you need that money check over check to live comfortably with your family, with whomever you're with. So to lose all that stuff, no one's prepared to just lose everything. That hurts everybody that was affected. And I think it's really awful to see how divided, and it's just the default seems to be celebrate pain and point the fingers in a way to make it politicized and make sure everybody that I think is evil continues to be perpetuated as evil, while the very people that are always calling the shots are padding their pockets with every tragedy, everything that happens. So anyway, thoughts and prayers there's a lot of good organizations and companies that are donating and providing supplies for the people of Southern California. And it is beautiful to see community step up among all the nonsense and fodder that has been smearing and all over the timeline. All right, I don't want to end on a dark note, so let's do one more that is light, and we'll ride this episode out, guys. Thank you, everybody, that's been along for this first episode of Something Wrong with the Podcast. Let's get in this final voicemail.
Hey, what's up, brother? Only advice I really need is really, like, I've been dating my girl for almost 4 years now. We have a great relationship, Texas great and everything, but ever since we've been having sex, she's told me that, you know, she wants me to start dirty talking, dirty sex, and I feel uncomfortable, you know. Mm-hmm. I just didn't, not uncomfortable, but I don't want to feel cringy. That's really my problem. I really want to know how you give it up. What makes you feel more comfortable in a bedroom to talk dirty? And, like, do I not need to listen to myself? Because when I hear my own self talk dirty, it just sounds mad cringy. And it makes me want to throw up. And I couldn't even understand how somebody would find that attractive. So maybe it's just all my fucking head. But I do need some help with that. Thank you, Julian. Thank you, Juju. Thank you, Juju.
All right, it's a fun one. Okay, well, clearly, lesbian couple, 4 years, love it. Love is love. It's amazing. your girl finds you attractive. I know what you're saying. The thought of your own voice and the thought of hearing yourself get like orally being sexy, saying it out loud is cringy. And I completely agree with you. I have never been the guy that's like, ooh, yeah. It's just even like falsifying it, saying it right now just sounds like I can't even like just look at me and hear me beat. I'm beating that pussy out. Like that sounds absurd. It doesn't even. I hate myself for even saying that. But you do have to remember you're 4 years in. Your girlfriend loves you. And I'm sure she finds a lot of things that you think about yourself that are cringy. I'm sure she finds sexy, especially when you're nose deep, you know, in the bedroom. So I look, maybe if it's not dirty talking, maybe there's a different form of talking that would work for her and also work for you. I know that there's the people that just give the compliment, they like the praise kink. So maybe your niche is a praise kink where you while she's doing her thing and you're saying, you know, you're giving her praise, you're bigging her up, you're making her feel good about her performance or whatever she's doing to you. That could be like, ooh, boil those dildos. So like maybe that's your thing. Maybe it's not a matter of trying to sound sexy, but you reassuring her that what she's doing is in turn satisfying you. And maybe that's also what you prefer. If you think it's weird that she's dirty talking you, then maybe you ask her to, you know, reciprocate the same energy for you when you do a move or you do something with her that's romantic or you do something in the bedroom. She's giving you compliments or like, I'm about to come, or like, keep doing that. Like all those kind of like directives, praising language. I personally, I like that, but I can't even front. I'm with you on dirty talk is cringy. I'm not knocking anybody that does it. For me, it's just not my bag. Hearing my voice, it's like you. I feel like you have to change your tone. Like me just saying it in my tone just sounds weird. I am curious to know like how freaky does she get in the. You said she likes to also dirty text. Texting's a little easier because at least there's a barrier there in terms of it's not like a call and response where like you say something, she says something. It's not, you know, instant. Texting at least gives you the space to think about what you want to say and how you want to say it. And it's also not you speaking. It's her reading it. So it's kind of like writing a, you know, like a sexy little novel, like a erotica. But you did say, you know, I hate hearing my own voice. It sounds mad cringy. It makes me want to throw up. You throwing up in the bedroom is not a good idea. You can't throw up on a dildo. I feel like that's contaminating it. It's probably not a good idea. Yeah. You know, try the praise. That's my advice. Praise kink it up. Tell her she's licking the shit out of you. And then you lick the shit out of her. She says the same thing back. Just keep licking, bro. You can't talk if you're licking. The real thing is, why are you talking? Something should be in your mouth. You're in the bed. If you're being romantic, neither of you should be talking. Throw some plastic in your mouth or throw some lips on your mouth. Like, something should be plugged. You shouldn't be exchanging much words, if any at all. Every hole needs to be. This is your fix. Fill every hole. Can't talk with your holes filled. I'll leave you with that. There you go. Work on that. All right, everybody. We did it. I want to give a special thank you to all the callers for today's episode, the first episode ever. You've cemented in history on Something Wrong with the Podcast. I want to give a thank you to everybody listening and watching. Continue to share this. Let's continue to build this community. And you can expect a new episode every Tuesday, audio at 4 a.m., video on YouTube at 8 a.m., same day. And we will continue to keep this rolling. I have more planned in the coming weeks. But for now, just keep an eye out for me. We'll have an episode every week. Talk soon. Enjoy your week. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.